The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Dan Kroll. You can hear this program every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. and repeated on Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. And if you are someone who is interested in doing interviews, maybe doing some investigative journalism, perhaps you'd like to do some human interest stories. There are all kinds of interesting things happening in town, and with all of our 60,000 plus different perspectives and our understandings of the world, I'd like to think we could come up with endless material to feature on programs like KORC News, Music, and Civics. We bring you this program 1 hour a week. It's an effort of the KORC community, and we are growing with this effort. As of Sunday, July 7th, our 12:30 block, 12:30 to 1 o'clock, is going to be local music showcasing interviews, and we would love to welcome you to help us out. It's a team effort. Send us an email, info@korcfm.com. If you'd like to make a contribution toward our efforts, this is an operation that does have a number of expenses. I'm not going to go into all the details, but everything from operating costs, licensing fees, electric bills, rent, personnel costs, KORC does have a number of expenses. As listener-supported community radio, we do come to you every now and then and ask for a little financial support to just help keep the lights on and beyond. Go to korcfm.com/donate where you can find more information. We have set up a number of different methods of giving: Venmo, PayPal, you can mail a check, you can do a secure online contribution. It is tax deductible. We do thank you for your support and for tuning in today for KORC News, Music, and Civics, heard Sundays from 1 to 2 and Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. here on KORC.
You're listening to KORC. I'm Nick Martin. The Corvallis City Council has adopted the 2024-2025 budget at a total of $270.58 million. This is the cost of operating the City of Corvallis. It is a $9.5 million increase from the previous year's budget. The increase is due to personnel costs, including wages and benefits. Around 7 full-time staff members are planned to be added by the city, a move that City Manager Mark Shepard says, quote, will help us address operational needs across the city. However much the increase assists some departments, others were left out of budget increase requests. Both Fire and Parks and Recreation requested increases totaling around $3 million, which were denied in the current budget. They had asked for a new medic unit, new positions, as well as minimum wage increases for casual staff at the Parks and Rec Department. Human resources is one of the city's main sources of expenditures. Some other additions to city staff include the following. The library will add 2 part-time positions to support the Friends of the Library, Library Foundation, and Volunteer Program, as well as branch operations. Parks and Recreation will add a new park ranger, an event coordinator, and convert 2 seasonal park workers to full-time maintenance staff. The Public Works and Finance departments will each fill 1 full-time equivalent position, a GIS data stewardship analyst and accountant, respectively. In the Information Technology Department, positions for an Enterprise Resource Planning Systems Administrator and an analyst position are funded. A summary of positions also include 1.25 full-time equivalent or FTE in the Community Development Department, 1 FTE in Finance Department, 1.25 FTE in the Human Resources Department, 2 FTE in the Information Technology Development, 1.38 FTE in the Library, and 1.2 FTE in the Parks and Recreation Department. According to the Gazette Times, in March, Finance Director James Inglis told the Budget Commission that with the pandemic behind and no looming recession, the city's revenues were stabilized and Corvallis was on track to meet its 2023-24 revenue goals. Property taxes are up 4%, transient lodging and other taxes are up 23.7%. And increased city service fees approved by council last December will contribute toward a 10% increase in monies generated from licenses, fees, and permits. In related news, the council also adopted a resolution to switch from an annual to a biennial budget cycle, meaning that starting at the end of the current cycle, the council will consider the city's budget over a 24-month period rather than a 12-month approach, as has been the practice. The reason behind this, according to the resolution, is it, quote, will provide an opportunity for better long-range and strategic financial planning and consolidation of efforts vested in the budget development and approval process. Finance Department Director James Inglis said that while the shift will free up staff time to focus on other projects, the extended time could make budget forecasting more difficult. He also said, quote, and then there's always a risk that the time savings you anticipate by going to biennial won't materialize. The council voted unanimously on the change. It's set to begin July of next year. Special thanks to the Gazette Times for some of the information provided here. You're listening to KORC.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics, a program heard every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KORC, repeated Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. This is Dan Krall in the Southtown studio, and I am joined by Anna Cassily. She is a trainer in communication and conflict resolution skills through her business, Growing Peace, which is here in Corvallis. And she has been doing this kind of work for about 30 years, and she joins us today. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much, Dan, for having me. It's really good to be here.
I understand that you have an upcoming class. I heard about this because I personally get emails through the Sustainable Corvallis Google Group listserv, which is through the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition, and I heard about your class. Tell us more about this upcoming class that you have.
Yes, this is going to be a six-week series on Monday evenings. It'll be held at the Friends Meeting House here in Corvallis from 6 to 8 in the evening. And we're going to cover really the basics of how to be a more effective communicator, how to listen better to hear what's up for someone else, and how to express what's up for you in a way that they're more apt to be able to hear it.
That is something that I think in modern times is more lost than a lot of us may realize.
Yeah, it's definitely an art that we have to put some conscious attention to, because many of us were modeled, let's just say, maybe not the most effective ways. A lot of the time we came out of a generation where it was power over, you do what I say because I say it. And while there's a time and place for that, what we're not teaching our kids is how to work out differences in a more mutually satisfactory way. So that's the focus of this class, is how do you find resolutions that really meet the needs of all the parties involved to the extent that's possible.
Who is the target demographic for this class?
Wow, I would say adults, but when you within adults, it's pretty much anyone, because the school skills that we cover are so basic, whether it's for the workplace, whether it's for working with your kids, whether for working with your partner, whatever, in community groups, if there's things that need to be communicated more effectively, it's really the same skill set that are just applied in little different variations.
Yeah. And in the modern world, it really does feel like a number of us are just coming from a number of different places. There are great books out there like Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell, which if you listen to that book on tape or just read the book, One of the takeaways I would say is that we are all coming from a different place in communicating, both as the communicator and then our receiver could be coming from a place that we don't even put into our realm of reasoning. And what we're saying is not landing at all the way we intend because of the receiver being in such a different space than we may understand.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And there are wonderful resources out there for becoming a better communicator. I'll say this particular class is pretty much grounded in nonviolent communications based on the teachings of Marshall Rosenberg. I studied with him many years ago and have continued to train and teach this basic body of knowledge for many years now, and have found it to be one of the most helpful for me personally. And as I share it with people, I see real results in their ability to communicate more effectively.
Can you tell us what are some of the tenets of nonviolent communication, also known as NVC, by the way, its acronym?
Yeah, NVC, it's often referred to. I think for me, it's really captured in one statement by Marshall, and that's that judgment, criticism, and blame are tragic expressions of unmet needs. Tragic because it's the way we're least likely to get them met. So a lot of what NVC works on is how do you express your needs in a way that's not judging, blaming, or demanding of the other person. And when you hear someone judging, blaming, or criticizing yourself, how can you put on a little sort of translator so that rather than taking it personally, I flip this little switch in my brain that goes, oh, this person has an unmet need. And it just really shifts how I'm then able to approach them. How can we work together to meet your needs, to meet my needs in a way that's mutually satisfying?
And in our culture, that may seem like a radical concept, but if we do start looking at communication in new ways, we might just find that there are more effective ways to get what we want. And Anna Cassely is doing an upcoming course. They will be meeting at the Friends House in Corvallis. Can you tell us again the details of when this six-week, six-part course will be starting and taking place?
Yes, it'll begin Monday, July 15th, and run for 6 weeks on Monday evenings till August 19th. And that's at the Friends Meeting House from 6 to 8 at 3311 Northwest Polk Avenue.
You can always look up Corvallis Friends Meeting Place online if you need the address. And you have a website which is growingpeace.net, which is the business that you run for over 30 years now.
Yeah, and so if people want more details or to register, pre-registration is required for the course. I do keep it fairly small so we can have lots of exchange. So I encourage people to go to the website and you can register right there, or you can call me if you want more information. My number is 541-301-7993. I'm happy to talk with you about the class, see if it feels like a good fit.
Have you taught classes like this in Corvallis in the past?
You know, that's interesting. I've relatively recently moved here during COVID, and most of my teaching has been online since I've gotten here. So this is kind of a new face-to-face opportunity for me to really connect with the community, and I'm so looking forward to having in-person classes now. I've done it for many years. I was in Southern Oregon before here, but this is going to be nice to be back face-to-face in Corvallis.
Yeah, there's certainly an element of face-to-face that you won't get online or through Zoom or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully it will build a community of people who really want to come together and support one another to be more effective communicators, to develop the compassion that's so fundamental to nonviolent communication. It's actually often called compassionate communication because sometimes people think, oh, I'm not violent, this isn't for me. But it's really, it's more about developing that compassion. Violent just being any time we're using our power over someone to get our way. So trying to move away from that to more collaborative solutions.
I can say from my own personal experience, just looking at my own communication patterns as pointed out to me years ago by somebody who was well-versed in NVC or nonviolent communication, that I have violent communication all through my blueprint. It's sometimes very hard to even realize it until someone points it out, or if you look into NVC.
Yeah, and I will say, I think that is an interesting aspect of the class I'll be teaching. What I found over the years is that people can learn the skills, but when someone pushes their button, those skills are out the window. So I do incorporate some centering of mind and body into the class so that we can develop the mental capacity when we start to get triggered to take that breath, come back to center, and choose to do it differently.
Yeah. That's important. It can be a very stressful society to live in these days with all the demands and the weights we carry being pulled in various directions. So a class like this, can you tell us, Anna Casley, can you tell us one more time the name of this class that starts on July 15th?
Yes, it's called Communicate for a Change. So whatever change you're trying to bring about in your life, I think this class will offer you some potential nuggets to help move forward with that.
And if folks would like to learn more, can you please give the website one more time?
www.growingpeace.net.
Anna Casley is a trainer in communication and conflict resolution skills. She has a business here in town called Growing Peace. She has been practicing for about 30 years and was kind enough to join us today on KORC News, Music, and Civics. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate it.
This series of classes is offered at a sliding scale of $60 to $120 with work exchange and scholarships available.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. The following is a special edition of Democracy Now!, celebrating Independence Day 2024. It features two speeches, one from Frederick Douglass, who spoke on Independence Day from a slave's perspective, and is read by James Earl Jones, and another by Angela Davis, read by actor Kerry Washington at the Women's March on January 2017. To hear full episodes and learn more about national and international news, go to democracynow.org.
From New York, this is Democracy Now! What to the Slave is your 4th of July? We'll hear Frederick Douglass's 1852 Independence Day Address, read by James Earl Jones at a performance of Voices of a People's History of the United States, based on the late historian Howard Zinn's landmark book, and Kerry Washington reading the words of Angela Davis. All that and more coming up. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today in this special broadcast, we begin with the words of Frederick Douglass. Born into slavery around 1818, Douglass became a key leader of the abolitionist movement. On July 5, 1852, in Rochester, New York, Frederick Douglass gave one of his most famous speeches, What to the Slave is Your 4th of July? He was addressing the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Society. This is James Earl Jones reading the historic address during a performance of Voices of a People's History of the United States. It was co-edited by Howard Zinn. The late great historian introduced the address.
Frederick Douglass, once a slave, became a brilliant and powerful leader of the anti-slavery movement. In 1852, he was asked to speak in celebration of the 4th of July.
Fellow citizens, pardon me And allow me to ask, why am I called upon to speak here today? What have I, or those I represent, to do with your national independence? Are the great principles of political freedom and of natural justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us? And am I, therefore, called upon to bring our humble offering to the national altar and to confess the benefits and express devout gratitude for the blessings resulting from your independence to us? I am not included within the pale of this glorious anniversary. Your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you this day rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence bequeathed by your fathers is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought life and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days of the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is a constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham. Your boasted liberty, an unholy license. Your national greatness, swelling vanity. Your sounds of rejoicing are empty and heartless. Your denunciation of tyrants, brass-fronted impudence. Your shouts of liberty and equality, hollow mockery. Your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings, with all your religious parade and solemnity, are to him mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy, a thin veil to cover up crimes that would disgrace a nation of savages. There's not a nation of the earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of these United States at this very hour. At a time like this, scorching irony, not convincing argument, is needed. Oh, had I the ability and could reach the nation's ear, I would today pour forth a stream, a fiery stream of biting ridicule, blasting reproach, withering sarcasm, and stern rebuke. For it is not light that is needed, but fire. It is not the gentle shower, but thunder. We need the storm, the whirlwind, the earthquake. The feeling of the nation must be quickened. The conscience of the nation must be roused. The propriety of the nation must be startled. The hypocrisy of the nation must be exposed, and the crimes against God and man must be proclaimed and denounced.
James Earl Jones reading the words of Frederick Douglass.
And the armies ceased advancing because the people had their ear, and the shepherds and the soldiers, where they laid beneath the stars, exchanging visions, laying arms, a to waste in the dust, in the form of shining valleys, where the pure air recognized, and my senses as I awaken to the cry. People have the power. People have the power. People have the power. People have the power.
Patti Smith performing People Have the Power at the first performance of Voices of a People's History of the United States. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today in this special broadcast, we look at Voices of a People's History inspired by the late great historian Howard Zinn's groundbreaking book, A People's History of the United States, which helped reshape how history is taught in classrooms. 20 years ago, Howard Zinn and Anthony Arnov began organizing public readings of historical texts referenced in A People's History of the United States. The two would go on to publish a book collecting these texts under the title Voices of a People's History of the United States. While Howard Zinn died in 2010, his work continues to inspire millions across the country and the globe. Can you introduce us to a speech that Kerry Washington reads, the great actor, of Angela Davis? Talk about the place where Angela gave this.
So the speech that Kerry Washington read was given by Angela Davis, the great civil rights activist and feminist, at the Women's March on Washington, the largest protest, a single-day protest in U.S. history, on January 21st, 2017.
And this, of course, was the day after President Trump was inaugurated.
At a challenging moment in our history, let us remind ourselves that we, the hundreds of thousands, the millions of women, trans people, men, and youth who are here at the Women's March, we represent the powerful forces of change that are determined to prevent the dying cultures of racism and heteropatriarchy from rising again. We recognize that we are collective agents of history, and that history cannot be deleted like web pages. We know that we gather this afternoon on Indigenous land, and we follow the lead of the First Peoples, who, despite massive genocidal violence, have never relinquished the struggle for land, water, culture, their people. No, we salute especially today the Standing Rock Sioux. The freedom struggles of Black people that have shaped the very nature of this country's history cannot be deleted with the sweep of a hand. We cannot be made to forget that Black lives do matter. This is a country anchored in slavery and colonialism, which means, for better or worse, the very history of the United States is a history of immigration and enslavement. Spreading xenophobia, hurling accusations of murder and rape, and building walls will not erase history. No human being is illegal. The struggle... The struggle to save the planet, to stop climate change, to guarantee the accessibility of water from the lands of the Standing Rock Sioux to Flint, Michigan, to the West Bank and Gaza, the struggle to save our flora and fauna, to save the air, this is ground zero for the struggle for social justice. This is a women's march. And this Women's March represents the promise of feminism as against the pernicious powers of state violence. An inclusive and intersectional feminism that calls upon all of us to join the resistance to racism, to Islamophobia, to anti-Semitism, to misogyny, to capitalist exploitation. Yes, we salute the fight for 15. We dedicate ourselves to collective resistance, resistance to the billionaire mortgage profiteers and gentrifiers, resistance to the healthcare privateers, resistance to the attacks on Muslims and on immigrants, resistance to attacks on disabled people, resistance to state violence perpetrated by the police and through the prison industrial complex, resistance to institutional and intimate gender violence, especially against trans women of color. Women's rights are human rights all over the planet, and that is why we say freedom and justice for Palestine. Over the next months and years, we will be called upon to intensify our demands for social justice, to become more militant in our defense of vulnerable populations. Those who still defend the supremacy of white male heteropatriarchy had better watch out. The next 1,459 days of the Trump administration will be 1,459 days of resistance. Resistance on the ground. Resistance in the classrooms. Resistance on the job. Resistance in our art and in our music. This is just the beginning. And in the words of the inimitable Ella Baker, we who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes.
That was Angela Davis, or I should say Kerry Washington, the great actor, reading Angela Davis's speech given at the Women's March on Washington, January 21st, 2017, the day after President Trump was inaugurated.
Our hope is that it will be a tool for people to learn not just prior history, but really recent history and how people have fought back, how people have resisted their own conditions of oppression, and most importantly, how people have acted in solidarity, because they've recognized the links between these different struggles. None of these struggles are really separate, that it actually matters that we are fighting together, and that's the way that we'll win.
Haley Pessin and Anthony Arnov, co-editors of the book Voices of a People's History of the United States in the 21st Century, Documents of Hope and Resistance. And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This Democracy Now! Segment was inspired by the book A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, which is available at the Corvallis Public Library. You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics.
This is March Pop for Community Voices on KORC. In mid-April, Mark Yeager posted this article on Nextdoor regarding the huge pay increases given to members of the Benton County staff who are not represented by the union. His post is entitled, Giant Pay Raises Handed Out by Benton County, and he goes on to say, Benton County recently handed out over $1.8 million in annual salary increases to their non-represented, non-bargaining employees. These employees are mostly supervisory personnel. There are 110 employees in this group, and the salary increases ranged from 0% to 48.84%. The highest paid employees, the top 25, received pay raises totaling $961,000 for an average raise of $38,440 per year. The average raise for the whole group is nearly $16,000 per year, although 14 employees got a 2% or less salary bump. Four employees got raises of more than $50,000 per year. Remember that these salary increases do not include the associated cost of benefits, so you can add on at least another 40% for benefits. The total cost of these salary increases is likely over $2.5 million per year going forward. I'm attaching a picture, he says, that shows the details for 25 employees. I did not see any coverage of this in the local media, and as far as I know, it wasn't publicized in the Benton County e-news that comes to my inbox frequently. I wonder why not. One might ask oneself, what is going on here? Yeager obtained this information from Benton County in the form of a spreadsheet via a public records request. I obtained a copy of this spreadsheet and did some analysis of my own, which resulted in this editorial, which I'm calling, In Benton County Government, Them That Has Gets. Sometime in 2023, Benton County staff engaged a national compensation consulting firm to collect comparable market data for a set of non-represented jobs. To you and me, this means the employees who are already receiving the highest county salaries, the managers and department heads. They then hired an analyst to assist in this task. In response to a public records request, a spreadsheet detailing the salaries and increases of this set of 110 people was furnished. An accompanying email from the county administrator gestures towards the need to raise salaries to retain competent employees in the face of high housing costs in our area. Given that the majority of these individuals were already making well over $140,000 a year, this seems somewhat disingenuous. Remember, although these increases apply only to salary, the manager's actual cost to us county taxpayers is their salary plus benefits, which generally add at least 40%. Despite their high salaries, many of these top earners do not actually live in Benton County or pay property taxes here, and they are the same people who are resisting union efforts for equitable pay. Prior letters to the editor have criticized our government for a surfeit of managers and shortage of actual workers. The people who pave our streets, staff our homeless shelters, teach our children, count our ballots, staff our public facilities, and keep our parks clean. These are the folks having trouble buying a home in this area. Some of the biggest winners in this equity pay lottery, ranked by actual increase in salary, not including benefits, are number 4, Tracy Martineau, Human Resources Director, whose department launched this initiative, which led to a clearly self-serving result. $50,000 a year plus raise, bringing her salary to $215,217.18. Number 15, Vance Crony, County Council. Mr. Crony negotiated the disastrous, for Benton County, franchise agreements with Coffin Butte landfill operators in 2000 and 2020. In both cases, Benton County ceded significant control to the landfill operator. There is no indication that he sought assistance from neighboring counties who have considerable expertise with negotiating large solid waste-related contracts. Against the objection of local experts, he persisted in joining the state timber lawsuit in 2019. That decisive defeat resulted in loss of face and tens of thousands of dollars for Benton County. $34,000 plus raise, bringing his salary to $225,978.69. Number 17, Darren Nichols, Director of Community Development. Mr. Nichols is ambiguously on paid administrative leave. There is no word from Benton County as to whether he will return to his job. This means that the Sustainable Materials Management Plan promised early this year, for which consultants have already been hired, will be postponed until late 2024. In November 2023, Nichols made untruthful and misleading accusations during a Board of Commissioners presentation. $32,000 plus raise, netting him a $204,968.61 annual salary. These three individuals exemplify county officials who put their own personal and fiscal aspirations above the needs of their county residents. But we can't forget our Board of Commissioners, the folks responsible for running Benton County and its staff effectively, efficiently, and in the best interests of their constituents, us. There isn't the space to detail the missed opportunities that lay at their feet. Instead of providing a sorely needed jail, an overarching design, and a deceptive campaign caused bond measure 2140 to fail spectacularly. And consistent mismanagement has left us in a weak bargaining position with the Coffin Butte landfill operator. Benton County residents deserve astute and transparent county officials who do not simply pay lip services to the 2040 core values statement, but act in accord with its spirit and directives. This is Marge Pop for Community Voices on KORC.
The Corvallis Celtic Festival is 4 days of music, July 25th through 28th. Thursday, July 25th, a free evening of local Celtic music. Friday, July 26th, Boston's Rakish at the new Prax Concert Hall at OSU. Saturday and Sunday, the festival moves to shady Corvallis Central Park and adjoining Library and Arts Center. Free music, free workshops, Celtic crafts, lots of food and drink. Visit CorvallisCelticFestival.org for the full schedule.
It's going to be sunny throughout the afternoon with highs near 101 degrees. We'll have clear skies tonight with lows at 62 and the moon in its waxing crescent phase. It's going to be hot and sunny tomorrow with highs reaching near 104 degrees. Highs are expected at 103 on Tuesday, cooling off to highs at around 92 by Wednesday. This is KORC.
Smoke cigarettes? Do you want to stop but can't? I know the feeling all too well. I smoked cigarettes for 24 years. I tried to quit a number of times. I had it bad. I smoked in the bathtub and the shower. That was challenging. You have to keep your hand dry and your elbow up. I rummaged dried butts from my car ashtray and from under the car seat. I would carefully straighten them out to prevent breaking the brittle cigarette paper. If they weren't long enough, I would break off one of the filters and use scotch tape to tape them together. I was past smoking to relax or to enjoy a cigarette with a cup of coffee. For me, smoking was not a bad habit, as a doctor told me. I did not know that I was addicted to nicotine. I did not know that nicotine is more addictive than heroin. But I did not quit because of the warnings about health issues. I did not quit because I got cigarette holes in my silk ties and dress shirts. I quit because cigarettes were taking my breath away. Shortness of breath eventually got to me. The fear caused by shortness of breath won over the urge to have another cigarette. Stop smoking was the best thing I've ever done. I have my breath back. I have my freedom back. For more information on how to quit, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or go to the website called smokefreeoregon.com. My name is Donald Russell. I've lived in Corvallis for over 25 years.
You're listening to KORC. I'm Nick Martin. Numbers of arrests, bookings, and releases are going up in Benton County. That's according to Benton County Sheriff Jeff Van Arsdal, whose office increased patrols, made more drunken driving arrests, and answered more emergency calls in 2023. They also booked almost twice as many into jail than the year before. This is all from an article in the Gazette Times in which Van Arsdal spoke with a reporter about these statistics. And here are some of those statistics. Drunk driving arrests went up about 30% from 2022 into 2023, with the total reaching 194. Sheriff Van Arsdal created a campaign called Enough is Enough, in which he dedicated extra deputies to patrol roads, specifically looking for drivers who appeared intoxicated. 2022 also saw 12 fatal crashes in Benton County, the most in over two decades. This year is faring little better, as there have been as many fatal crashes so far as there was in the entirety of 2023. In 2022, sheriff's deputies booked 946 people into the county jail, with last year's bookings at a whopping 1,402 the following year, a 48% increase. Sheriff Van Arsdal attributes that to more available deputies and increased 911 calls. The Benton County Jail cited and released 89 people without holding them in 2022, about 9% of everyone booked that year. Van Arsdal said jail staff closed intake 22 times that year, unable to process additional arrests with the building's two holding cells and two waiting areas already full. The sheriff's department rents out jail cells in Lynn, Polk, and even way out in Wasco County when the local jail is full. Benton County arrested 1,663 in 2023, a year-over-year increase of nearly 19%. The department released 24% of those, 1,402 booked that year under the state's new guidelines. Van Arsdal said he hired 5 deputies between the previous 2 years, bringing his law enforcement division to 38. The sheriff's office operates with a $47 million budget in the fiscal biennium that started in July, a 15% increase over the 2021-2023 county budget period. Benton County Sheriff's Office saw an 11.5% increase in calls made to deputies, taking about 20,300 calls. Special thanks to the Gazette Times article entitled Benton County Arrests, Bookings, Releases Trend Upward, written by Alex Powers. You're listening to KORC.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. We're going to feature the last part of the interview with Daniel Keebler, the fan, the friend, the photographer of Bruce Cockburn. And then we're going to play a song that he discusses in the interview.
So, Daniel, do you play any instruments yourself?
Yeah, I started playing the guitar when I was 18 years old. And I still play today, but not quite as much. The hands are getting a little achy, et cetera, et cetera.
So, you said that you first started listening to Bruce about 1985, right?
Right, yeah.
And you'd been playing guitar for about how long when you were...
Yeah, for about 7 years.
Okay, okay. So, what impressed you about Bruce's techniques, and could you talk about some of the instruments that he plays?
Sure. Well, his guitar technique is famous, very famous. He has a really unique style because he uses his thumb, his right hand, the picking hand, in a very amazing way. It's a little hard to describe, but it works over time. And he also uses 3 fingers in addition to his thumb, which is not quite as common for some guitar players, but it allows him to do more things on the guitar than most people. And it confounds a lot of people who just listen to him, say, on a CD, because they can't see what he's doing, and they're wondering how he's doing all this. So that is really a real important ingredient to what he does, is his right hand technique.
Now, is he mostly acoustic?
Well, he's had a fair share of years touring and playing in the studio with electric guitar. I would say the balance is probably, however, more toward the acoustic guitar, no question about that. Yeah, and in recent years, that's what he's done a lot of acoustic stuff. Bruce also plays a little instrument called the charango, which is from South America. It's a small stringed instrument, 10 strings, I believe. Some people might, who don't know it, might confuse it with a mandolin, for example. He's very good on it. He's written several very beautiful songs on that. For almost all of his career, he's also playing a dulcimer as well on several songs. And he's had that since the early 70s. He has the same dulcimer that he had back then. He's had other kind of instruments here and there that he's played through the years. A bowron, which is like a little hand drum, per se, where he beats on it. And Stolen Land, in fact, the song was performed on that at one point in his career.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm probably missing a thing or two, but those are really the main things that come to my mind.
To be honest, the only album of Bruce's that I ever bought was his Christmas album. And when you and I were talking earlier, you mentioned that has been his best-selling album ever.
Yeah, according to the information I have, and I'm sure that if I'm not right about that, somebody will correct me, and that'll be fine if they do. That's my understanding.
Do you know how many he sold of those?
Yeah, you know, I don't actually. I'd have to consult some of the photos that I've taken of the plaque at his home that says how many were sold in order to get this particular award.
Gotcha.
But maybe I can follow up with you later.
Sounds good. I'd be interested in that, seriously. Because the reason I bring up that album is because I love that album. I think it's one of the most beautiful holiday albums ever. And I've played it on the Lost Court. Yes, listeners, you have heard Bruce Coburn play Christmas music on the Lost Court. And I believe he has played that South American instrument you were talking about and the dulcimer on that album, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
Haven't listened to it in the last week or two, but I suspect that you're right about that, yeah.
Because I remember looking on the album on the back of it, and he's playing multiple different stringed instruments and percussion as well. So that's why I was just curious about that. So let's fast forward to today.
Okay.
What is Bruce up to today?
Well, his newest album came out in 2023. It's called O Sun, O Moon. And so basically he's been touring behind that album, and that's about it. I mean, he's been busy touring. He's touring throughout the U.S. and Canada and Italy this past March. And he'll be out again this fall in the eastern part of the United States. And then he has some dates coming up in March of 2025 as well.
Excellent. And you were talking earlier too, you mentioned before we sat down together about his archives.
Right, yeah. So probably 10 or 11 years ago, right along there, he started donating, he and his record label started donating items to McMaster University, which is located in a town called Hamilton, Ontario. It's right near Toronto. And the archives are available for everyone to visit. You can go online to McMaster's website and make an appointment to go there and see them, the items he's donated. And he's still donating things to that. My wife and I, Jerry, we stopped in Hamilton recently when we were in Ontario and went to McMaster to deliver some items that Bruce needed to get to the archives. We dropped those off for him. So we had an opportunity to poke around at some of the things that were already there. It's very fascinating.
Well, Daniel, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us about Bruce Coburn. I'm wondering if we can end our interview with a last song by Bruce Cockburn.
You bet. It's called Us All from the album O Sun, O Moon.
And it was produced just this last year, wasn't it?
It was. It was on the album that came out in 2023.
Excellent. Excellent. Daniel, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.
It's been great for me, too. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Oh.
That was Bruce Cockburn with his 2023 song, Us All, from his most recent album, O Sun, O Moon. You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics.
Think about your mother, your sister, your girlfriend. One in six women is a victim of sexual assault. Now think about your father, your brother, your best friend. Men are victims too. Rape can happen to anyone. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, encouraging you to call the National Sexual Assault Hotline to learn how to support someone you love. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit rain.org. That's RAINN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
The Day of Remembrance 2024 for Hiroshima and Nagasaki 1945 is coming up Thursday, August 8th. This will take place from 6:30 p.m. until dusk. The program starts at 7. This will be at the Riverfront Park at First and Madison, renewing our pledge to promote peace and end war. There will be live music, traditional Koto music, fold peace cranes, displays, speakers, and the program culminates at dusk with a candlelight procession lantern-lit flotilla on the Willamette River. That's the Day of Remembrance 2024 of Hiroshima and Nagasaki 1945, Thursday, August 8th, 6:30 p.m. to dusk. This event is sponsored by Oregon State University School of History, Philosophy, and Religion, Veterans for Peace, the Linus Pauling Chapter, Corvallis Divest from War, and OSU-SHPR Peace and Justice Strategies Office. There's more information if you do an internet search for Corvallis Veterans for Peace.